I think we all understand differences. Like, okay, I get differences. You don't have to explain that too much. But really what a key to this breakout and a key to the teaching that's going to happen is to really understand the values that lie beneath the difference. I wanted to share. Sometimes it's nice to know. I appreciate knowing people and their background. So I'm married to Angela. We've been married for 21 years and we have 4 kids. Our oldest is a sophomore daughter, and then a son who's freshman, then a son who's 7th grade, and then our youngest is in 5th grade. So, Matt.
I married Rebecca. She was in NOA, and we have 6 children. And on my feet, I cannot name their grades. My oldest is 18, and my youngest is 3.
Good. All right. So, this session, we're going to talk about renewing through differences. At this point, you're aware that you're different individuals and differences come up in your marriage relationship. And so part of what we hope to talk about is just a way of walking through those differences that leads to deeper understanding and a renewal in our relationship. So let's start with a theme verse, Ephesians 4:1-3. It says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. One of the things that we'll talk on quite a bit, actually, in renewing differences is the characteristics, the Spirit-led attitudes that we bring as we walk through the differences. Sometimes we want this 5-step process, we walk through it, and then we have agreement. But often we neglect these important facets in how we work through those conflicts. Things like lowliness, humility, right? To know that I'm bringing something into this, and long-suffering, that we're suffering long with each other, that this is an ongoing process of working through differences, right? It's not like someday we just arrive.
One of the attributes of God last night was reception. And his reception of people. And forbearance is a great way to understand the characteristic of reception. When we receive one another who is different from ourselves, forbearance is going to be required. There is going to be some tension. There's going to be some incongruence that we have to sit with and we have to love through. And in so many ways, forbearance offers a unique and powerful love in marriage. Whereby we live together in unity, even though we're different.
Yeah. Yep. It is a grace of receiving each other where you're at.
So we're going to look, just kind of break this into four different transitions. First, we're going to look at some examples of value differences. So what is it we're talking about when we're talking about differences? I think I know. We're going to flesh that out with a few examples so that you can see it. Then we're going to look at some context. Context matters. Working with Caleb on this presentation, Caleb mentioned to me, he says, man, in so many situations that I work with couples, they miss context. And trying to get couples to understand context is really, really key. So lean forward during that. Number three, looking at a real life example. So we've got a very gracious couple who has agreed to share a few things out of their marriage that are going to really, really illustrate what we're learning here. And then finally, a pathway to renewal. So based on all of this that we've learned, what does renewal look like with differences? So those four. Stopping points.
Good. So we'll start out with just some examples, just to kind of highlight when we talk about this, what does this look like? And perhaps you could write down your own kind of areas. And so let's say one spouse really values private family time. That to them is a high and a strong value. When we're all together, right, as a family unit, and we're spending time together. Whereas another one really values project committee involvement. So they have a gifting such that to be involved with the church or pouring into this ministry or this thing over here is something they're gifted in, right? And they feel purposeful and meaningful. And that can create up a conflict, right? That perhaps it's the husband over here and he feels like every time he wants to step into areas that he really feels gifted in, there's resistance, there's pushback. And that the wife feels like the family's not being prioritized, valued, that private time, right? Or another one, maybe there's one spouse that's really missional oriented, right? Their focus is not even necessarily going on the mission field. It could be that, but there's different ways that we engage in mission. And there's one that's stability about the long term. I'm looking for the stability and security of our kids, our future, our family, right? Both are helpful and needed. This isn't about good or bad in any of these, but it creates tension, creates conflict, right? And then the final one, which probably never comes up for any of you couples, but we'll just say, for example, if it would, one spouse really likes things orderly and neat and tidy. Another one is pretty casual, actually. And they're okay with a little clutter, right? In fact, it feels fairly comfortable to them. Right? Creates a difference.
One word up here that you might not right off understand is the word value. I think we all understand differences. Like, okay, I get differences. You don't have to explain that too much. But really what a key to this breakout and a key to the teaching that's going to happen is to really understand the values that lie beneath the difference. And so that's why you're reading here, value differences. And even as something as trite as this one might be, and we think it's all about the dirty socks, there's really a value beneath it. Mm-hmm. So be listening for that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yep. So some of these conflicts, we gave three examples. You probably have some in your own relationship, perhaps. Feels like we get into this place of like that, you know, trap where the harder one of us pulls, the harder the other one pulls back. And we just feel stuck. We feel like when we get into the conversations about, you know, how things should be picked up or not, it's like we're going round and round, right? And we get into these positional places that's like, feels like I'm, you know what? I've given an inch and that's all the further I'm going to go. It can feel that way, right? And so in that place, the way in which we communicate about that conflict makes a great deal of difference. And that's what we want to talk about today as we work through these differences, is that when this starts to happen, nobody wins. We have two losers, right? And so we talk about how do we work through this in a way that understands something more than just a position. If we minimize our spouse's position on orderliness, that misses a whole lot of meaning and value underneath that. So the next section, we look into context. So context matters in how we step into these differences. So this grid here looks at value and time. So on as you look across here, we go from short time on the left side to long time on the right side. So for your particular value differences, how long have you been engaging in dialogue about them? Is this something that came up last week? Or have you had this conversation for 20 years? It's going to make a difference in how we have that conversation. If we've had many conversations over a long period of time and not all have gone real well, guess what that brings up this afternoon when we have that conversation. So all of that to say, we need to accept and receive that conversation that's been going on a long time is going to look different, and we need to have different expectations than those conflicts that just happened last week. And then secondly, as we move from the bottom to the top, low value to high value. So all of us have values. And if we were to rank where those values line up on this scale, so with this value difference in your relationship, would you put it up here in the 8 to 10 range? Or would you put it down here in the 1 to 2? I think those things that are up here, you're going to hold a lot closer to your chest. You're going to have a whole lot more emotion behind that. You're going to have a whole lot more meaning behind that. It affects how I communicate about a value that's up here at a 9 or a 10, right? And the way in which we communicate about it.
And so this is, we're talking about context here and the importance of context. You can just hear by the way Caleb is explaining this, that we're now kind of beyond the issue or the situation, the words that were said, which is very often what we fixate on. You said this, or this is what happened, or I'm frustrated because of that. And we think that, this, and the words were the problem. But really what Caleb is suggesting is, there's a lot of context behind the words. There's a lot of context behind the situation, behind the circumstances. And helping couples go there is where a great deal of health is brought to the conflict.
Yep. The next point about context is, how is our friendship? At initial level, this seems to be so disconnected from conflict. Why are we talking about friendship when we're having a presentation on renewing through differences? This idea and concept comes from John Gottman. He's a marital researcher and has done research with couples. And one of the things he talks about is, what is the climate in your relationship? So it may be snowing outside. Okay, so that's the weather today. But if you were to, so not about what's the weather in your relationship, but what's the overall climate? So if you were to look over, it's winter right now. So it's longer term. Would you say that in your relationship, you have a positive view, that you experience closeness, friendship, trust, right? If that's true, in that place, we have a positive sentiment override. And you know what we do when we're in that type of a relationship? We actually make excuses for our spouse. Oh, they're just having a bad day. They've just had a lot on their plate right now. That's why they reacted negatively to me, right? That's what we do. But when we're here, when irritation, anger, when we're not cultivating friendship, closeness, appreciation, guess what can happen? Our spouse can engage in a very loving act and really want our best intent in mind. And we have on these negative lenses that attributes negative motive to their behavior, that they mean well, which is really hard, right? It's really hard, because then what happens is one spouse can be pouring in, and that which they're pouring in feels like, oh, you're just doing that to make things look good, or you really don't care about me, or see?
Or you have a selfish motive.
Or you have a selfish motive. Yeah. So it can be helpful as we move into working through differences. How is our friendship? Because if our friendship isn't close, we feel connected, guess what can fuel negative conflict? The desire to be heard and understood. Not even so much about the value. Yes, about the value, but just as a spouse. I want you to be responsive to me, to see me, right? And so none of us, at least I don't think any of you, put on your calendar Tuesday next week at 8 o'clock, let's have a conflict. We don't do it, do we? It just comes up. But what we can do is we can kind of invest or pour in positive, small steps, right? Hey, thanks for doing this. Or, you know what? I love your ability to be present with me, right? When I come home and you're there. Appreciation, express, affirm, connect, spend time. Those small moments build friendship. So it puts us in a place to work through conflict in a whole different way. It does.
You know, while we don't schedule conflict, we do schedule friendships. All of you do this with your friends. Hey, let's get together on Friday. Would you like to do this? We always do that. And so really, with the work that you do with marriages and conflict, building that friendship is a place that you go. Gottman, who has already been cited here, has is really known for his ability to inspect a marriage, watch it, and know if that friendship climate is in place, and or if it's contempt is there in the marriage, and if there's contempt, the slightest offense is detrimental. But in a climate of friendship, we're able to weather a great deal, right? And it makes sense. It makes sense. And there's in some ways, our friendship in marriage is a really, you know, we talk about agape love and how that is the most important love. And it's beautiful. I in no way want to minimize agape love, self-sacrificial love. But phileo love says, I want to. Phileo says, I want to be here. Sometimes agape says, I have to be here, or I'm not leaving. Phileo says, I want to be. You see the beauty of that? We all choose our friends, and we aren't bound to them. And so there's a tremendous opportunity when we grow that in our marriages, really helps us through these differences, right?
Yep. It's good. All right. And then the final piece here, again, thinking about context, is the characteristics, right, needed. As we move into engaging dialogue and conversation about these differences, the focus here, as you can see on the slide, is how do we talk about the conflict? One of the things in grad school they had us do was they had us videotape couples. And so it was more about us as learning therapists to how and what things we could do different. But one of the interventions we would use is we would have them engage in a conflict, the couple, engage in a conflict discussion, and then the next session, play it back. And they got to see themselves speaking, engaging in a conflict discussion. Wow, I didn't know I sounded that way. They got to see themselves in a different way, in a different light. They could have been talking about family, how the house is, but one of the things they started to cue in on is how is it that I'm communicating about it? And this is what this slide is really all about, is how do we talk about it in a way that doesn't hurt our spouse, in a way that we can go deeper, just a step deeper in understanding what's under that difference. And so there's a number of characteristics that certainly are helpful. You know, we referenced on the initial slide, humility, realizing that there's some things that I bring to this different that makes it difficult for my spouse to work through it with me. I need to honor that. I need to accept that. And long suffering.
I just, I really like, Caleb, as you go around this circle, notice, you know, four of the five are internal and they have everything to do with us. And so much of our conflict and differences, we think, is outside of us. If that over there got fixed, then this would all be better. But this renewal, wonderfully, four-fifths of this can be reached by myself.
Yeah. Yep. And this piece of shared purpose is, when we think about moving through differences, one of the initial steps is that we share the purpose of seeking understanding. Initially, that actually agreement is off the table, right? So how often do we want to step into getting to a place of resolution? Because it's hard to not have things resolved. I want things to be resolved. But we have to be careful to say, you know what? Let's just set resolution and agreement aside for a second, and let's just focus on hearing each other's hearts without the pressure to get it figured out right now. And that's a healthy thing to say, We're going to share this purpose together as we move into this.
I think that's got to be, I'm fascinated to hear what Caleb would say on how to coach people that way, because I really do know what an argument sounds like. It's like, I know those points. And in an argument, we are always trying to be persuasive, and we are always trying to resolve. And if I play this right, win it my way.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is a back and forth is altogether different with a different objective.
Mm-hmm.
And that objective not being necessarily to settle the matter or to come to who's right, but you said understanding.
Yes. Yes. Which is really hard, because then it requires us individually, which is back to what you talked about, which is why it's so important that our heart is in a place of renewal, that these characteristics are in that place as I move into this conversation. And we'll get to this, I know when it moves out, when I go into, okay, I need to make my point here, which is challenging, but is part of the process of renewal. Okay, so we've come to the point now that we're going to pause from the PowerPoint teaching and have teaching and learning from a couple. So we've asked Brother Carl and Sister Angie Kloffenstein to share a conflict that has come up in their marriage relationship. And as we do, I'm grateful, because this is a high level of vulnerability for couples to come up here and peek in, right? And share. The reality is each of us have these places, but it feels a whole lot different when we get up in front of people and start talking about it. So thank you for your willingness to just step into this. So we'd ask you to come forward. We have a couple stools here. And so I've asked them to think about what's a value difference in their marriage relationship, and how kind of it's come up, and how they've walked through it, and what they've learned. So if you would just begin by kind of introducing yourself, how long you've been married, and then you can jump right in from there.
All right. So Ange and I, we've been married for 7 years. And to date, we don't have any children of our own. And it's brought out a range of emotions and thoughts and things we never considered before.
Mm-hmm.
And our approach to it is quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share a little bit about how I am and how she is. And she'll share some examples of how, like you mentioned, the context makes a difference on the words I say and how she interprets them.
Mm.
So, me personally, I'm a live in the moment person. I only think about today and what's in front of me. I'm not worried about next week. I'm promised today. I'm not promised tomorrow. And some verses from the Bible that resonate me relate to contentment. And in Philippians, Paul states that I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. And I feel like that's something that really I can connect with and I strive to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really focused on the moment and in the day and just being satisfied and thankful right where I am right now.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit more of an imaginer, a dreamer. I've always been able to picture the future in my mind, and I like to plan things out. And so I always think towards the future. Is there something I need to be doing today that's going to affect tomorrow? So kind of a big difference there between us.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people around me, almost everybody around me, has children. My family, they have children. My friends have children. They're valued in the Bible. Psalm 127:3 says, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and they are, and they should be valued in the church. But sometimes that can bring up feelings in me that I can't really just suppress. And so how that's created some tension between us is sometimes there'll be a trigger, even monthly cycles can bring a trigger or something, and I'll start crying. And Carl is very good at working with his hands and fixing things. And so, you know, he would love to stop the tears and just miraculously make the problem go away, but he can't. And so he can't fix it. So he'll just, you know, put his arms around me and say, well, we just need to be content, which is his mantra, as he said. And so in my mind, I was picturing this fuel gauge in my car, and it's Carl's contentometer, and Angie's on empty. You know, she's failing. She's not doing a good job. So I'm, you know.
Yeah, that's the message you got when he was in the place of wanting to help you be content. And it was like, you're on the zero.
Yeah.
On the empty.
And so I can read his mind, right? So I
think
so. His contentometer was, you know, flashing red, and Angie's failing, right? That's what he was thinking.
Yeah, sure.
In my mind.
Yeah.
And so what has really helped us is just opening up to each other and communicating. And honestly, because we don't have children, we do have time to do that. We have many opportunities to seek each other out. And one thing that has helped us is finding something to read together or listen to together that can be a catalyst that gives voice to our thoughts. And one thing in particular that helped us with this was we listened to the ACCFS talk on infertility, where a couple and Caleb kind of helped them share their feelings. And we were listening to it in the car on a trip to Illinois, and we would stop and say the husband just said something. I would stop and say, Carl, is this how you're feeling? And he would say, yes. You know, he didn't have a voice for his thoughts before, but it kind of gave him voice. And then we'd listen a little more, and the wife would say something, and he would say, is this how you're feeling? And I would say, kind of, but mine's more like this. And through that, it was kind of a tough moment, but it was a good moment to open up and really be able to talk about it. And I just kind of asked him directly, okay, I'm struggling, and you say, we need to be content. Are you pointing that finger at me and saying we, but really meaning me? And he just almost had this shocked look on his face. No, I never was thinking of you. I was always thinking of myself.
Wow.
And so it was just nice to realize that he wasn't pointing fingers at me. It was really something that we both desire, but we're just looking at it in a different way. And that was healing. And it was a relief, because he didn't think I was a failure. He doesn't think I'm a bad Christian because I want to have children or because my feelings are coming out in a way that he's not expressing them. But, and also, this is not something that we've attained now and we're just good and this is over, but it is something that we can, that we're still working through, but we've gotten some help with. And Carl's going to share a few lessons that we've learned from it.
So as she said, we're still learning, but a couple of things that we can look back on and think of is not assuming what the other one is thinking, but taking the time to listen and try to understand and make sure we understand where they're coming from and why. Makes me think of this morning, Caleb, you were talking, and on a sunny day, the feelings aren't there. On a rainy day, they are. You didn't really explain what happens on a cloudy day. that's where it gets a little sticky. So that's something that we've, looking back, that's something that we can do better. And then another thing that we've noticed is there were times where our focus was not on God, but on children. We would say in our words we were seeking God first, but our actions would show differently. So keeping our priority and our focus and seeking fulfillment in God and not in anything else is huge.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That was beautiful. I appreciate your vulnerability, particularly about a topic that's difficult to talk about. So thank you. Feel free to, yeah. Sit down here.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
So a couple pieces there. Maybe as we walk through this, we can just pull in some of the things that the two of you shared and the insight about contentment, you know, and what that is and what it looks like, that was on the surface, but it meant something very different than what, you know, Angie, you initially anticipated, right? And those sorts of things of kind of drilling down underneath there are incredibly helpful in connecting and working through some of that pain, right? That we can do it together.
And I think you could see the friendship that they have and how much they're able to weather because of that friendship, that even the differences don't turn to contempt. Mm-hmm. Because they're understood in a context of love, and I must not be understanding this right. Help me understand what it is you're saying, because it certainly can't be this. And of course it's not. Mm-hmm. And so they keep pressing into that understanding until they've arrived at it, they've mm-hmm. captured it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're just going to walk through a few things here, to kind of wrap out our time together. The first is, conflict can come from a couple different places. And so the first can be that we can have a dream or a value that's known but disrespected. So it's known amongst us that we value, you know, certainly kids. And they don't have a different perspective on kids. Their conflict wasn't about whether to have kids or not. It's how do we handle not having kids? There was a difference there, right? That they walk through. At times, we don't know what our dream or the value that our spouse has. It can be under the surface, so to speak, right? And that's what we're going to talk about here, is how is it that we move and seek to understand what's under the surface? So this is a iceberg, right? And so we know iceberg, there's a whole lot more under the surface of the water, which that's underneath, it's what we don't say than what is said on top, right? Because when we get into these value differences, and again, going back to what Carl and Angie shared, well, he's saying, just be content. On the surface, that's what she's hearing. There's a whole lot more under that for Carl. There's a place that is a value for him that he holds to, and he has tied it into scripture, and he wants to lean in and live into that, right? On the surface, though, as Angie's hearing that creates tension, especially when she feels anything but content, right? Is that okay? So under the surface, so at the top, or even if we go back to the conflict about, you know, tidy and casual, at times, our thoughts can go along the lines of, you know, he's irresponsible. And that's a cue to us that there's something under there. When our thoughts go to attributing the conflict to our spouse, there's likely something under there, right? Because your spouse is never solely responsible for conflict.
And if I can place my finger again on some of the dreams or the values of Carl and Angie's, when I heard them both at the start, and they both shared their perspective, I didn't know who was right. They were both right, weren't mm-hmm. they? Mm-hmm. To have a value that says, I think about today, God hasn't, you know, I'm not promised tomorrow. I mean, that is such an important value. And then to hear Angie talk about planning and thinking mm-hmm. about the future, what can be done today, as we think about that, is God is a God of investment. God thinks that way. And once we hear their hearts and their dreams and their value, all of a sudden, you can imagine our arguments. All of a sudden, what do you do with an argument when both are right? Right? I mean, things start to diffuse. Well, things start to go a different direction. That's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so this is just an example. This is kind of, we set up at the start and talked about, again, this analogy of a tidy home and a kind of more a casual approach. And so, again, the hidden dream underneath this for the wife, right? She grew up in a home that felt a bit chaotic, right? And for her, promises weren't kept. So whether it was someone in her life or multiple people said something that they didn't follow through on. So for her, it isn't just on the surface of please pick things up around the house. It's actually, there's a value there that this provides a level of peace and security for our kids that I want to pass on that I didn't have. That shifts the conflict into a whole different realm than keep the house tidy, right? And for the husband, he grew up in a family where his mother was a bit naggy when it came to cleaning things around home. And particularly what he felt and perceived, doesn't mean it's true, right? Our perceptions aren't always true and perhaps rarely true. But he perceived that she was particularly naggy when people were coming over, right? And so it mattered more about what the house looked like than about just being with people. So his value, when he has now grown up and has his family, is that we don't worry so much about, you know, this toy on the floor over here or this, you know what? I don't want to relive that, right? So his value is, his desire is just comfort without criticism, without being nagged, right?
And one thing that's really easy in this situation for the wife to do is to say, he doesn't care that the house is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a projection that is probably not true. I'll give you a quick little story where this just happened in my marriage. We went to see my high school daughter's choir concert. And I told you I've got a three-year-old. And the three-year-old was, well, in my view, manageable, but a little rambunctious. And in my wife's view, too rambunctious. And so who went out with a three-year-old? My wife did. And she thought, Matt doesn't care that Wren was, you know, that. And in my view, I did care, but it wasn't important enough for me to miss my daughter's concert. Because in my view, it wasn't quite at that level yet. So we go back to that leveling of values. Mm-hmm. We both have a value that our kid is manageable and not disruptive. But we had a different value on where that lined up and what action needed to be taken place. But it's very easy to say, you don't care about this.
Mm-hmm.
No, I do care. It falls in line with everything else we care about, don't we?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good example. So as we move into this place, there's a technique called speaker listener. And this can be helpful, particularly when we're talking about topics that can bring up strong emotion for us. Kind of like, really, the two of you were doing it on your drive with the podcast. That's speaker listener. Let's slow this down so that I can understand you. Because sometimes what happens in these difference discussion is we're speaking to each other, but we don't have someone that's listening, that's hearing, that's, oh, wow, that's how you feel? No. I'm too much in, I want you to know how I'm feeling, right? That's where we're at. And so this is saying, let's slow down. And you know what? I'm going to use the example of, so this podcast is given language. And Angie stops and says, as a listener, is that how you feel, Carl? Oh, yeah, that's how I feel.
Because sometimes we don't have the language to express ourselves.
Right.
I mean, some are more gifted with language than others. And that's not unheard of.
No.
Where some spouses are very articulate and the other ones are not. And so they're always on the losing end because they're not able to be the attorney that the other one is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're at a disadvantage from the start.
Sure. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so
it's intimidating.
It's very intimidating. So to bring and allow some of that, actually, this is somewhat helpful to that end.
Yeah.
Speak about the utilizing I statements.
So the I statements, again, is how do we step into this conversation and maintain safety? Because as soon as somebody gets defensive, then guess what? We're back in the position. I'm holding my ground here. And so the speaker listener is about, I feel, you know, like a failure when I hear you talk about contentment. I feel like I'm not measuring up, like I'm not able to be a Christian.
Now, notice the difference that was a true statement. I feel like a failure when you talk about contentment is a true statement. And that's very different than saying, you think I'm a failure because I'm not content. See how defensive that is? And it's likely inaccurate. And you are projecting something you think that the other person is saying. So when we start with you, it's a pretty good sign we're probably off on the wrong foot.
Yeah.
All right. So
it starts putting blocks up. And
but we can speak to our own experience.
Yep.
I feel this way.
Yep.
And I react.
Even softening with it, this may not be in your intent, and it's likely not, right? But this is what comes up for me. I feel this. This is what happens to me. And then the listener, being present, not personalizing the dream, which is really hard to do, right? Some of this, again, back to the individual work of regulating my own kind of emotions. Encouraging aspiration. One of the gifts that we give each other is being on the path to understanding, self-understanding. That was a beautiful thing that, at least this is another thing I caught out of what Carl and Angie shared, is they both were on the paths of supporting each other in deeper discovery of what was happening to them. But they were on it together, right? It led to deeper discovery, not just of the other, but of themselves. And that's a powerful thing as couples. So as the speaker, you talk about the dream. What is it that contentment means to you? Why is that so important to you? Tell me a story about contentment. And when has that happened in your life or not happened? Right? That's the speaker speaking into and sharing. And then the listener. And these are just questions. And again, the idea is, how do we facilitate the speaker? So as the listener, when you're in the listener role, guess what your role is? Not agreement, not challenge, not blame. Lord, give me curiosity to understand this. She is passionate about this, or he is really, this is important. Why is that? Not in a critical way, an understanding way. And if you had your ideal here, what would that be? Right? And we have to be careful, though, as listeners, that we don't jump in and say, that will never happen, right? That is so unrealistic. Or you, right? Because it just cuts off openness, right? We need to go with it for a little bit.
Which often dreams and ideals and values are ethereal, right? They're not completely practical. They are pie in the sky. They always are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to give that person space and not, to allow that to be articulated.
Yeah. Yep. To hear and go with their passion, their excitement, and let go of, this is so unrealistic, I don't know. Yeah. Just let that go and just be present, right? Because you're giving a gift to your spouse when you're doing that. You're planting seeds for renewal. We need to monitor warning signs. It's kind of like on our dashboard, right, of our cars, we get like, okay, low windshield wiper fluid or need to change oil. Guess what? It's true about our heart too. And that's okay. My guess is your spouse would rather you say, you know what? I need to take some time because I'm getting worked up and I know I can't be present with you. And let's talk about this later. Then just like hanging in there, but you're not there, right? And so knowing what is it in myself that starts revving up my RPM to the point that I'm no longer focusing on being curious and understanding, but I'm focusing on getting it my position, right? My position and getting that understood. And then finally, once your spouse feels understood by you in their dream, why it's important to them, then we move into this exercise, okay? So
I want you to pause you right there, because yeah. Listen carefully to what he said. Once your spouse believes that they are understood by you, is that how you said it?
Yes.
Once your spouse, listen to that carefully, once your spouse believes that they are understood by you, what that means is you can't decide when that happens. Right? There's no way for me to say, all right, it's time to move forward because I understand you. No. Once Rebecca believes that I understand her, we can move forward. So that requires, only she can answer that. And only you can answer whether you feel understood. I think that's kind of important.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's a level of safety there. So this exercise is, so you can see as the slide says, inflexible areas, this center circle right here. So there are certain things that for you, for this particular area, feels inflexible. Like, this is really key and important to me, right? And then there's certain areas that, like, you know what, I'd like to have it, that would be the ideal, but really, I'm okay letting that go, right? It's important for us as we step into this, that we take the mindset of, in order to be influential, I need to be influenced. I need to be impacted by my spouse. Because when we're in the positional place, I'm not accepting influence from my spouse, right? I'm trying to influence them. And so we move in here, because if we're still in the positional, guess what my inflexible circle will look like? Like this, right? I want it all. Given an inch feels like given a mile. And so, so each spouse, so maybe let's take the example of, you know, again, the casual and the organized. So maybe for the spouse, you know what? She's okay with a little clutter in certain spots or spaces, but not the dirty clothes. The dirty socks laying around, that just does it, right? That's an area that's, there's a line. But outside of that, there's some flexibility. For him, being nagged every day just puts him over the edge. And so, like, it's okay if you remind me once a week. And so from that, right, that you come up with a temporary compromise of how you're going to live this out. It says, you know, for her, I can let you know once a week. And if there's things there, I'll put it on the floor in your office. And that we can share in, you know, cleaning certain parts of the house, whatever. But the point is, we're narrowing down the scope. So it's not like it feels like I'm giving everything, but we're able to honor and hear each other.
And it's in the context of the value that they have.
Yes.
So if it's chaos, I cannot live in chaos, then we would be thinking about what is core here that preserves and keeps at bay chaos.
Yes.
Is it really these things, or is it something bigger than that?
Yeah.
So keeping in view that what it is that we're valuing, what it is the dream is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's good. All right. And then wrapping things up, this is just kind of a conclusion slide, things to keep in mind. So once you've walked through the compromise, try out a temporary compromise. Try it out for a few months. See how it works, how it doesn't work. Have another discussion. Accept ongoing conflict at some level. Carl and Angie talked about this. We're different people, and we need to accept that it's not like we get to the point we arrive and then all of a sudden Angie gets what that contentment is to the point Carl does. She's never going to get there, right? Because she's planning out here, which God uses that in a wonderful way. And so there's going to be ongoing discussion that creates tension and strong emotion. But we can we're learning ways to walk through it healthy. Conflict isn't the issue. Too often, this is my own, I think we think of conflict as bad. It's not bad. Iron sharpeneth iron. It's how we engage in it. We're different people. And there's a beautiful, you know, things to discover underneath those values of one another. It's how we engage in it. That leads to deeper intimacy and knowing each other at a deeper level. And then finally, learn to accept some spinach, some uncomfortable feelings, right? That we don't like, but they're good for us. They're good for us in shaping and molding us more into the image of Christ.
Learning to accept that discomfort really comes back to that Ephesians verse that we read off at the beginning. The long suffering and the forbearance really is always going to be present there. I don't think forbearance works without discomfort. In fact, forbearance necessitates discomfort. And so God calls us into forbearance, which means he's fully aware that that discomfort is going to be a part. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Thank you for your attention. Thanks again to Brother Carl and Sister Angie for you sharing your willingness to testify and be vulnerable.